Order, order. Okay, our topic for this month is dynamic risk management. Can I give the floor to Kumar or Russ?
Russ. Thank you very much. Agenda paper four. Today we are seeking the board's view on the proposals and recommendations in agenda paper four. Additionally, we're seeking feedback regarding next steps, specifically the completeness of those next steps as indicated in the paper. To remind the board, the paper provides an outline of the proposed approach, and as such, there are many areas which will require additional discussion and debate as we move through the project. So, to begin, what are the objectives of the model? They are discussed in paragraphs 13 through 20. However, to simplify potentially, our objective is to improve information provided regarding risk management and its impact on current and future economic measures. To achieve that objective, the staff believe four key challenges should be addressed. These challenges were identified and to some extent confirmed through previous outreach during the stages of IFRS 9 and the 2014 discussion paper on dynamic risk management. Those four areas are transparency, eligible items well best described using the language in the paper that's been colloquially referred to as the capacity issue, the dynamic nature, which is largely a focus on operational complexity and the resulting information content that comes out of that complexity, and finally, performance measurement. So what is the proposed model? The proposed model states that if derivative instruments are successful in aligning the asset profile with the target profile, and the target profile will be realized through the collection of cash flows, and the derivative should be accounted for as discussed in paragraph 26 of the paper. There were three terms just mentioned that require further explanation and definition, as discussed partly in paragraphs 46 through 67. Those terms are the asset profile, again, perhaps to oversimplify, best described as the hedged item, borrowing the IFRS 9, the target profile, which is the quantification of management's target NIM repricing profile, the hedge objective, in other words, and finally, DRM derivative instruments, perhaps the simplest area, the derivatives or instruments used to bring the asset profile to the target profile. While the paper uses the terms cash flow mechanics and fair value mechanics, these terms are used for ease of comprehension. The proposals are neither a pure fair value hedge accounting approach nor are they a pure cash flow hedge accounting approach. Approach one, cash flow hedge mechanics. This approach states that if perfect alignment is achieved mathematically described as the asset profile plus the derivatives equal the target, and the change in fair value of the derivative should be deferred to OCI and recycled to the profit and loss statement as the hedged cash flows impact profit and loss. The main advantage of the cash flow approach is that there is strong alignment between the business with the business activity. The business activity is not to eliminate present value risk, but to stabilize NIM over a period of time. This implies the entity wants to achieve a certain cash flow profile. This opinion is reinforced as feedback received during various phases of outreach have stated that risk is managed on a cash flow basis rather than a fair value basis. There are two main disadvantages from a cash flow approach. The first, as explained in paragraph 38, is that providing a complete measure of performance is complicated by the existence of the lower of test. The lower of test has its merits and its drawbacks, and it will be discussed during a broader conversation on performance. Furthermore, the mechanics will result in OCI and therefore potential volatility within equity. Approach two, fair value mechanics. If perfect alignment is achieved, and repeating mathematically, the asset profile plus the derivatives equal the target, and the change in fair value of the derivatives and the asset profile should be recorded at fair value through profit and loss, the asset profile for the fair value attributable to the hedged risks. However, the objective is to transform assets to a stated objective and obtain the fair value risk inherent in the target profile. As such, it is very important to note that the changes in the fair value of the assets plus change in the fair values of the derivatives will not equal zero. Left alone, this will not provide a faithful representation of risk management in the statement of profit and loss. In order to address this, the change in fair value of the target profile would also be recorded in the statement of financial position and in the statement of profit and loss. In this way, if perfect alignment was achieved, the statement of profit and loss would reflect the asset profile plus the derivatives minus the target profile equals zero. Typically, fair value hedge accounting works well when offset exists between the hedging instrument and the hedged item. Given the existence of the target profile, that is not the case, and thus fair value hedge accounting is less amenable on that basis. However, this approach is superior in that it would align measurement for the balance sheet and the income statement, thus avoiding volatility in equity and OCI. Furthermore, performance is easier to understand in a fair value hedge context, as performance is automatically recognized in the statement of profit or loss. The fair value risk has been eliminated, then there should be no difference between the valuations of the hedged item and the hedging instrument, providing a clear link between risk and performance. However, as stated, the objective is not to eliminate fair value risk, but to achieve the fair value risk inherent in the target profile. As such, this complicates the measurement and the performance and mandates the recognition of the target profile or the changes attributable to the hedge risk, in addition to certain highly probable forecast transactions in the statement of financial position. With regards to recycling or amortization, as stated in paragraph 33 of the paper, a common concern regarding cash flow accounting is the resulting OCI balance, the information it purports to represent, and how and when that figure should recycle to the statement of profit or loss. The staff acknowledged that guidance focused on the how and when of recycling will be key to the accounting model. Nonetheless, the staff referenced the discussion in paragraphs 33 through 36, which highlights recycling is required under both approaches, and thus is not a distinguishing factor between the two models. As discussed in paragraphs 27 through 32, both approaches will accomplish the objectives as defined and earlier discussed. However, as described in paragraph 45 of the paper, the staff recommend approach one be selected for further development. The staff view the alignment with the business activity as a strong advantage for that approach. Furthermore, the staff consider the challenges associated with the lower of test different in kind and scope to the challenges associated with recognizing the target profile and certain highly probable forecast transactions in the statement of financial position. Irrespective of the approach taken, a number of key decisions are required to provide a complete picture rather than an outline of the model. A list in some detail of those discussions can be found in paragraphs 46 through 67. I won't go into much detail on those. However, they can be summarized as follows: definition, delineation, designation, discontinuation, disclosure, and just to change up from D's, performance and recycling. With that, I will turn it over to the board to comment about the staff's recommendation and questions regarding completeness of next steps.
Really appreciate it. And you've spent a lot of time giving us education sessions so that we could get to here. And I appreciate your explanations. Initially, when I read the paper, I favoured approach two because it seemed to me to be a simpler approach. However, I've had the benefit of discussions with various people, and it really isn't, and there are some complexities there that mean I do actually favour approach one now. And I think the problem with approach two is this business of creating a target profile, which we then have to recognise. And it wouldn't fit with any conceptual framework definitions, and it would be hard to explain. So although there are difficulties with a cash flow hedge approach that you've outlined in the paper, it would be my preference that we did go with approach one. And we didn't go forward on approach two. Thank you.
Martin?
Yeah. And the decision is about the future of this project. And I agree with the staff recommendation. And if we go for a fair value hedge model, I think that basically was what we introduced with our discussion paper on dynamic risk management. That was, in my understanding, a fair value hedge model. And I think the feedback was not so positive because people thought, okay, it is maybe a kind of different business model, but I think then we have to fair value what is already amortized cost, and I think it would be the whole banking book or in our new model maybe the target profile which you have to fair value, and that is more, I think, a new kind of business model where you then have new recognition and measurement requirements. But as I said, okay, that was, I think, not liked by many when we issued our discussion paper, so we should not go the same route as we have done in the past, so it is maybe cash flow model. But also with a cash flow hedge model, I think you have addressed in your paper, okay, that there is this kind of problems, then you have the fair value movements, and in OCI with isn't fair value and volatility in equity. I think there are two things with that. First is a regulatory issue. My understanding currently is okay, that is a filter in Basel requirements that you don't have to have any impact from cash flow hedging to that, but there is only kind of changes, and I think it is a big issue for banks if we introduce this model, and maybe then regulators will decide maybe it is a kind of has to deduct from tier one equity. That would be a big issue, and then I think we have developed a model which nobody is using, because man, based on the location where I came from, okay, many people moved from cash flow hedging to fair value hedging, but it was not only regulatory, because it was also in then this OCI numbers in equity, which could be large for banks. It could be billions of euros or dollars or whatever. And then, okay, CFOs have to explain that to users, to analysts, which is very, very difficult. And therefore, I think that could only be a kind of issue why maybe then banks in the future will not use this kind of model. And therefore, the question is, which I have mind to decide on the future direction. I think the, with these two alternatives, I think cash flow is the right one, but I'm still not convinced, okay, that is what really the banks want. And I really want to avoid that we, because when during my whole career, I think people try to develop a kind of macro hedge model, and nobody has achieved it so far. And I want to avoid that we again, maybe during the next 4 or 5 years, trying to develop a macro hedge model which nobody is using and nobody is liking. And therefore, my proposal is in a really, really early next project step, we should maybe have a discussion with banks if that is a kind of model, is that an acceptable model? Because I think the worst thing what we can do is now to spend another many years on a model which nobody willing to then apply.
So if they don't like the fair value hedge approach and they don't like the...
What they like is derivatives for hedge accounting at amortized cost. That is what they like. And that is really also in Europe, I think, the kind of the carve-out. That is what people, banks are using. And what we think for many banks in Europe, which are currently using the carve-out model, that is an easy thing. And our model then is then introducing volatility in equity. So if you have to choose, do you want to stay with the carve-out or do you want to introduce volatility in equity?
Well, of course, we also have banks outside of Europe.
We have also that, but I think the main vocal banks who want to have a kind of this kind of macro hedge model are in Europe.
Yeah.
That is what I understand.
Do we ever go for derivatives at amortized cost?
No.
Oh.
Therefore, that is what I'm saying, that is we have to test very early now. If we have a proposal of a model, is that what then preparers want also to apply to adopt, because otherwise we spend a lot of time here and resources and develop something which nobody...
But then we would also be acquiescing in accounting practice, which we think is very bad.
But we might spend a lot of time developing a model and still end up with...
Yeah. So what I want to say is, okay, that is maybe if you decide between both, but I think it is still critical that we have in an early stage to check, okay, if this model is liked or...
Jian-Chao?
Thank you, Hans. First of all, I support the staff proposal. I think the paper is very clear and try to have us, you know, make the things simple and try to how to reflect the economics of dynamic risk management. Why I support this proposal, comparing two cash flow hedging mechanics and fair value hedging mechanics, I think first is that because the target profile is the design profile of the cash flow determined by the management. So I agree with the staff's point that actually if the target profile and recognizing the fair value changes of the tax buyer actually may not meet the definition of the conceptual framework. And secondly, why we need a dynamic risk management. The main objective is to achieve the design the cash flow rather than eliminate the fair value changes. So this is, I think, why cash flow hedging mechanic can better meet the objective of dynamic risk management. And also it can improve the transparency, what the company, what the entities they are doing. And because currently the financial reporting have, you know, a lack of this kind of information about the target profile and its implementation for the future cash flow, something like that. So based on, I support this proposal, but I still some observations. First is that if we will try to make this proposal implemented easily, first I think we need to have very clear and strict discipline on both of asset profile as well as target profile. How to define them and how to set clear criteria for them. It's very, very important. And secondly, because the proposal model focus on risk management activities, these kind of activities actually different from other business. So I think we should make clear what kind of target risk management is, what's the objective, what kind of mechanism. And the third is that we also need, the paper say raise this kind of point, because dynamic risk management is different from currently general hedging accounting model. That is one-to-one designation there. So if we are going to introduce some kind of designation mechanism and documentation, what kind of thing we need, especially because of dynamic risk management based on the portfolio basis. And this kind of portfolio basis is open and dynamic. So how can we do that? I think we should think about that. I expect the staff to explore further. And the fourth that I agree with Martin said that currently we are bringing those changes of fair value into OCI. And maybe this number will be big. So when those numbers will come out, so this is regarding to the recycling. What kind of recycling, when and how to determine those numbers to be recycled to the P&L, I think it's very important, because one thing I worry about that, because those derivative, fair value changes arising from a derivative, they go to OCI. If we have no strict discipline and no clearly, you know, criteria when they should be recycled to the P&L, one thing I worry about is that whether the company will use this kind of mechanism to manage their earnings. I think we should try to reduce this kind of dangers.
Sure.
This is my point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sue?
thanks for the paper, and thanks for trying to move us forward with a direction that's helpful to have something specific to focus on. I've got a couple of sort of high-level observations and then one specific question. So on the high-level observations, first of all, building a little bit, I guess, on what Martin said, and I don't have any better ideas than what you've come up with on the paper. So with that as background, I guess I do have a little bit of hesitancy that if we go down the path on this project, it's inevitably going to be very resource intensive, I think, for us and for the outside world, just because of the complexity of the topic. And we've been working on it for a long time. So I think we need to try and be a little bit creative in terms of trying to get our head around early on just how complex it might be to operationalize this, sort of, and how complicated the accounting might be to work out how much discipline we need and to deal with open portfolios and when you recycle and not, and try and bring some of those issues up front sort of relatively early on if possible. And I say that hesitatingly because I know that's not an easy request, because I am a little bit worried that the banks probably want a model which doesn't really result in volatility and profit or loss, and I think we will have it to the extent there's any ineffectiveness in our thinking. they really don't like volatility and equity either, and cash flow hedge accounting mechanics gives them that. And also I think they probably want something that's not too difficult to apply, and I'm not sure that we're going to deliver that either. And so while I agree it probably looks like the best way, I'm a little bit anxious that maybe it might be not be that well received. And I think the earlier we can get some feedback in the process, the better for all of us to work out what the way is forward. So that was my first high-level comment. My second high-level comment is, while I think you've probably mostly convinced me that the cash flow hedge accounting mechanics are a better starting point than fair value hedge accounting type mechanics, I do worry a little bit that one of the reasons really that the discussion paper got thrown out was because of the scope of the fair value of the remeasurement that we required, and the fact that if you had decided consciously not to fully hedge your interest rate risk, it was the gap that was being shown in P&L. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it was entirely because it was a remeasurement, but maybe partly scope, but I'll go with your thinking for the moment and accept cash flow hedge accounting. With a reservation, though, which is the fact that, and I want to flag this now so that you don't think I'm being difficult later on if I raise it when we go further down the project. When we were working on IFRS 9, we got into a major argument with banks and audit firms on current cash flow hedge accounting, and it's reflected in quite a bit of detail. I was just looking at the basis to IFRS 9, and the reason why we had a fight with people was because we think of cash flow hedge accounting as being based on a valuation concept in the same way that fair value hedge accounting is, but you're looking at the revaluation of your hedged item versus your hedging instrument, and sometimes to approximate that you use hypothetical derivatives. And then when we talked to people in the market, it was really apparent that they didn't think about cash flow hedge accounting like that in a lot of cases, and we had a massive argument, I'm looking for the words, with the fact that it wasn't just a cash flow matching concept. So what people tried to tell us was, as long as the cash flows on the instrument matched what they were trying to hedge, then that should be the case, that there'd be no ineffectiveness. And we had a massive argument with people about the fact that that is not what cash flow hedge accounting mechanics are. Now that's a big long lead-in to say that in IFRS 9 we put a lot more emphasis on that to try and clarify how the mechanics of cash flow hedge accounting is meant to work. My reservation is because loads of people, including the population that we'd be targeting with this model, haven't applied IFRS 9 yet. I'm not sure they're on the same wavelength as we are in terms of how cash flow hedge accounting mechanics work. And that was a debate even for really simple onesie-twosie hedging before we even get to macro. And so I think somehow we'd need to be comfortable that people get what we mean by cash flow hedge accounting if we go down this path as well. Not impossible, but just to flag, I think it will be an important point. And the specific thing I wanted to ask you was, in your proposals, you talk about, I think you use the word perfectly, and I know you're doing that, I think, in light of the fact that this is at 30,000 feet at the moment necessarily. And I guess one thing I was interested in would be how we would think about, if you'd entered into derivatives that moved you closer to your target profile, but you didn't manage to exactly achieve your target profile, either because you couldn't get the derivatives or it was too costly or something like that, would we be thinking that a piece of the remeasurement on the derivative would go to OCI because you'd partly got there, or is it sort of an all-in, all-out, you're perfectly in or you're perfectly out? And I don't know whether you know the answer to that yet, but that would be something I'd be interested in as we develop the model.
Can I just come back to a couple of things?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've gone through the discussions you referred to on the hypothetical derivative method, and actually after that it had to be brought back to the board. Let's be very clear. When we think of these matching, we are not thinking of cash flow matching with no PV impact on it. It's on a present value basis. So if you look at the board papers, and maybe I'm preaching to the choir, and I hope I am, a hypothetical derivative is not a method of effectiveness testing. It's only an input which goes into measurement of effectiveness. And I don't think when we are talking about this, we are anywhere different from that concept, because one of the fundamental things, if you vary away from that, it, in my view at least, vitiates one of the fundamental requirements of hedging in 9, is that you always do everything on a present value basis. Whether you do a hypothetical derivative or you do a hypothetical bond, it's a PV that you need to do. Coming to your second question, I think it links up to the first point which you made about what are the key decisions that we talked about early. And of course, this is one of the things we need to go back and work on a schedule. And I think one of the key things which we need to talk about, and also when we refer to the carve-out, Martin, it's pretty nuanced. And the carve-out, what happens, the nuances of the carve-out effectively, it removes effectiveness requirements completely. You can do bottom layer, you can do sub-LIBOR, you do not have to take into account effect of interest rate movements and prepayments and things like that. So one of the early decisions, and that will be challenging, so you'll have to give us a little bit of leeway, is that we need to bring in and discuss what will be the performance measure that we think about in this model. What is good, what will be there. And because think of it, your last question will also be driven by what we say is the performance of this. Mm-hmm. My gut reaction is that because if you look at a cash flow hedge mechanic, you will get noise in P&L, but you will not necessarily be thrown out. But since we are looking to a target profile, we need to have a discussion on whether you are thrown out, or because if you're so away from your profile, then what are you doing this activity for? So that question needs to be discussed, but it's too early for us to do that. So one thing, also a takeaway from initial discussions, and of course we'll get more feedback as we go along, is one of the critical things we need to discuss, and maybe we need to rechange what we were thinking, is that we need to bring in performance measurement much earlier, because that's going to be make or break of this as well, when we go to the outreach.
François.
Well, I was pleased following the paper, the way you said it, that makes it easy for us in this difficult process. And I'm happy to support approach one, as you have suggested. But I have exactly the same warning as Martin has. I'm really afraid that we're going to start from, you know, thinking in ideal world, and then be shocked with the reality very soon afterwards. And so I think it's important that we, indeed, in one way or another, ensure that we are on the right tracks, because that's where practical difficulties arise, that disagreements creep in. And in fact, I think I have already a few issues highlighted here. What I remember of the various discussions on this subject is that as soon as you start, for one reason or the other, you start putting limitations on the population of hedge items, when these are in fact a portfolio, when you start saying you can take some of it but not all of it, generally you create a problem and you create rejection. So I was, in fact, triggered by what was behind, you know, you are very careful telling us that you're not going to bring us the ideal model. It's going to be as good as possible. And you are considering that part can be recognition, part can be disclosure. I don't really know what you have in mind yet, but I'm afraid that this would be limitations that could create problems. I also run into the same issue when you're starting discussing how you could prevent having trading activities creeping in. Again, I'm afraid that with some form of kind of arbitrary ceiling, you would have an issue. So anyway, all sorts of form of limitations that move away from what is really being hedged in practice, I think it brings inevitable issues. The other point I want, the other very good point that I see in what you suggest is that you're clearly within IFRS 9. So we see that it is consistent with IFRS 9. It's just
partly, not fully.
When I say consistent, it's not replicating what is in IFRS 9, but it's not something that is developed completely aside and away from it. And I was happy with that. I have also a question about the transparency issue and the way you would have the target profile be disclosed, and wondering whether we don't have any form of proprietary information issue there. So whether there would not be a possibility of getting transparency with the risk management objective and also how the, in fact, disclosing in one way or another the effects of the hedging activities, rather than the very detailed how that is done. So because I think it's important to not to run into this difficulty. And finally, I think it would be very instructive. I mean, in the past, a certain number of difficulties have been identified in various approaches that were considered. And it would be interesting to see how the methods that you or the model that you propose eliminates the difficulties that were identified.
How have we addressed the challenges? Otherwise, why are we doing it? Yes.
But good that we're progressing.
Daryl?
So along with others, I think I support where you've got to the recommendation that you're making. I think for a couple of reasons. Firstly, I think a lot of the difficulties in terms of the mechanics are equally difficult for the fair value approach. You're going to run into the same types of problems there. I think it better reflects the way it's managed and the way it's thought about in the process. I think that then leaves us with, as others have mentioned, a couple of problems. I think the first one is the mechanical problem of what it does to equity. And I think people have talked about getting feedback. I think it's important that we at least get some indication from which direction we think prudential regulators are likely to take. Because if we're creating a significant prudential problem, that needs to be something we think about, and I think that's going to go down the line. I have less sympathy with having to explain the number, because I think we want them to explain the number. That's the point of accounting. So I think from the mechanics of the model, those are perhaps two things we need to think really hard about. I think the other side of it is we've got what I'd call, for lack of a better term, the emotional side of it. And putting aside for a second Europe, a lot of the rest of the world, in terms of banks, and Hans, you touched on that, are currently using non-GAAP reporting.
Yeah.
And non-GAAP reporting is really cool because you have no missing performance. You always hit the performance. You have no audit requirements. There's no real issue around what the audit requirements are. You have no specific disclosures. So you've got this ability to do quite a lot of what you want to do in that space. Now, I don't pretend to fully understand how the carve-out works, but the impression, my personal impression, is that the carve-out in some ways codifies non-GAAP. So it allows a sort of a practice along those lines. So I think that kind of idea that a lot of this stuff is not necessarily there, it's not, is one that we are going to have to address. And I suspect going today to preparers, asking them, do they want to carry on doing what they're doing right now, or do they want to do something that's going to be harder and going to require disclosure and audit? I know what the answer is going to be. I mean, so I suspect the discussion has to start with regulators and with users of financial statements, because those are the people who are either going to say, you know what, we're comfortable with the environment we're in, or actually we want more. We want to feel a little bit more comfortable with the numbers we get. So I think I agree with the others that early feedback makes sense, but I think that's the nature of that early feedback is probably going to be regulators and users of financial statements. I also fully agree, and I was going to mention before Kumar did, the issue of the effectiveness testing, because this is one of the areas that is really, really a hard crossover point for the way people think about it. Because it is not 100% hedging, people very often seem to think that they can never be ineffective. Their performance can never fail. And I think that's a big cover, because to my mind, the biggest plus of going down this route of getting this model is to give early indications to users of financial statements that this didn't work as the way I expected it to. And so I think that performance assessment is going to be a really important first hurdle to get past.
Won't be an easy one, Daryl. That will be the one which will take the maximum amount of time, I promise you.
Chuck? Thank you. A little bit similar observation as that Daryl articulated. I think this proposal is the most practical proposal at this moment. So therefore, I agree with the staff to explore more this direction. Having said that, I have a slight problem with the idea of a target profile. And as everybody pointed out, it is not defined in the conceptual framework. But not only that, I think it's somehow breaching basic fundamental structure of a set of accounting standard. Because a set of accounting standard is to, you have to apply the one standard for one asset. You have to apply the relevant measurement for that transaction or asset. And then aggregation of those measurements will be the outcome of your performance or balance sheet or whatever. So that's the basic idea of accounting standard, a set of accounting standards. However, if we introduce the idea of target profile here, and then maybe in my emotional reaction is somehow we have already target outcome here, and make kind of a choice of measurement or standard to make it in harmony with those outcomes. So that kind of changing the concept is very well fit for the what we call dynamic risk management. But the dynamic risk management in itself is quite difficult to define, because risk management has a variety of meaning, so different from one-to-one hedge. So actually, dynamic risk management is risk is the difference from the target. That's the risk. So then if that is the case, anything out of the target is the risk. So in order to meet the dynamic risk management, then eventually the target comes first. However, as I pointed out, if the target comes first, then it's quite different from the basic structure of that asset of accounting standards. So that is the big challenge. So therefore, in order to make this model accepted, I think we have to ring fence what is the difference between other transaction accounting standard, and the, what is the area we have to ring fence, and that this is the area we can apply target model. So this is conceptually challenging, but if you are going to try that challenge, so I try to be supportive.
I appreciate it, Doug. That's one of the things why we'll have to discuss what it's applicable. As of now, based on past board discussions, this is only limited to interest rate risk. That's it. Uh-huh. We are not extending it anything beyond that. But even if that comes up, if as a later, it's a valid point that you make, and it's a discussion that the board needs to have. Absolutely.
I'm out.
Thanks. I will start it out. I think I should thanking staff for the paper. I think we had a magnificent, a brilliant journey in the education before we got to this point where we start discussing accounting. And when I read the paper and consider all the education we had before, I think to me it was important to be aware of why we are here. So why we are here, we don't mention too much. Why we are here, we have a problem today, because I'm not limiting my assessment to Europe, since I am from another region where we don't have the carve-out. So while we are here, we have IFRS 9 that grandfathered the hedge accounting to IAS 39. So it's difficult for me to really defend IFRS 9 from time to time in terms of hedge, when it goes back to IAS 39 and say, look, but if you want, you can go back to IAS 39. This creates first a difficulty in discussing what is the best approach. The second really creates a legal impediment for many jurisdictions that do not have the carve-out to get rid of IAS 39. And we had three problems with that. I have to keep IAS 39 because you, ISB, told me so in IFRS 9. I have to keep IAS 39 because of the SMEs, and I have to keep IAS 39 because of insurance up until 2021. So we do have a problem with IAS 39 versus IFRS 9 now. When it comes to this particular aspect, we promised that we would explore an alternative to the macro hedge, portfolio hedge that we have today in IAS 39, that apparently limits what entities in general, not only financial entities, can do it. And I think we have, to me, the most significant problem is what you call here the capacity issue. That is costly, is difficult to explain, and actually do not represent, according to the entities, what they actually do in the risk management. Well, that said, in short, I will go straight to support staff because we had to do this. I will go straight to approach one because I don't see any possibility of we entertaining ourselves in approach two in discussing is this an asset or liability under the concept of I just think under approach two, we would spend a lot of time and with no possibility of success. And this, to approach two is also much more complex to apply, much more difficult to explain to users, and I don't see really any benefit in approach two. So if we do have any chance to really change the environment as of today, is approach one, considering the two approaches you put forward before us. On the regulatory impact, I actually would caution us, I don't think we should seek far too much what regulators would expect to apply if we are successful in this model. I think we should first concentrate in a model that we believe is the best model under our literature, is the most model really to tackle the problems that you have identified. Because at the end of the day, if the main problem is transparency, we could easily go to disclosure, and that's it. Explain the DRM practices, what is the real or and the final result of DRM, what you've done, and that's it. As the volatility, today we are talking about interest rates and derivatives DRM. So they are fair value today. They are going to straight to P&L. We are talking about potentially change the house, the parking lot between P&L and OCI. Then, but at the end of the day, it will be easier to explain. So I really caution us in terms of regulatory impact. I don't think regulators would really give too much in terms of their appetite when we finish this project. That I'm talking about effective date in 3, 4, 5 years. So I think we have to do that. The mixed model we have we had in our feedback, the mixed feedback we've received actually suggests that we, at least for this limited set of exposure interest rate, for a particular type of entity, we should go and pursue this. So we have to be very clear that we are, if we are unsuccessful, what we are going to do with IAS 39, IFRS 9. I think, of course, it's too early to think about that. However, we have to start thinking because this will apply only to a particular set and to a particular set of entities as well. And this carve-out, this grandfathering applies to all entities. So that said, I think the only way for us at this stage, in my view, is to pursue approach one and try to develop a model that is acceptable under the conceptual framework aligned with IFRS 9.
Mary?
Amaro started with context and then gave his tentative conclusion. I'll do it the other way around, but then maybe explain how I'm approaching that, which is, given the analysis laid out in the paper, I agree with the staff proposal to focus the initial efforts on building a model based on the cash flow hedge mechanics, you know, for both the reason you cited in terms of the type of activity being more like that, but also thinking about our past experience with the portfolio revaluation approach, which to me lines up more with the fair value approach. But now that let me give the context, which is very important and goes back to start, you know, some comments made by others, including I'll start with Martin, which is I think we have to be really explicit about the project management aspects of this project and, you know, different ideas about testing early, etc. I think what we've got to do is build in a relatively early milestone so that we don't make a 3-year investment in something before we have any sense of how will it work, will, you know, do people feel it's so complex that they would prefer just to deal with the accounting issues or something not being directly reported in the way they see it. But you know, I think we'd have to be clear that this isn't a, well, what would you like? It's a, you know, this is what's on offer. it's this or nothing, rather than, you know, this or what would you prefer kind of thing. But I'd say the project management aspect that comes out is have a very early milestone before we have a fully built out model that looks at that tests whether it's worth continuing to invest in this project. At that point, and I think in that context, it makes sense for the staff to focus on one alternative that you're developing rather than developing two parallel alternatives. First of all, we lose our minds trying to do the compare and contrast. But so those are the reasons why I say, yeah, focus on something based on the cash flow hedge mechanics. Now, some other context besides project management generally. One is, I did struggle flipping the switch in my brain from the education to this, because I walked away from the education and said, here's what I learned. Understanding an entity's duration, target duration, is really important. And how successful they are at achieving that target duration and what it costs them to achieve, you know, to accomplish what they accomplish. And last, that there's an important operational issue in terms of applying existing hedge accounting models, which is the capacity issue that you described. And the first three especially are, well, the first two, what's their duration and how successful are they, are about balance sheet attributes. You know, what's the duration of the assets? And then suddenly we come here and we're talking about interest margin. And yes, you know, really, you were talking about NIM all along. It's not a new concept, and I don't feel like it was a bait and switch.
That's good.
Yeah, it is a different articulation and a different focus, because we were talking before about the characteristics of their portfolios of assets, and now we're talking about the income generated by them. And obviously, the two are always interactive. But I was a little surprised at first when I picked up this paper and saw that we were focusing on, the focus was on the interest margin reporting rather than attributes of their asset management. So that's one observation that I offer. And the other is, I want to chide you a bit. I didn't note the specific site, I don't think. But the staff comments that duration DRM is not faithfully represented today. And that's an assertion made in here that I don't agree with. I think what happens is that the hedging instruments, the derivatives, are measured at fair value. The hedging instruments are measured at what we consider to be an appropriate measurement basis. But what we don't see brought together is the relationship between those two. And the question is how much is missing. But I don't want us to go around saying that our current standards, our current model, fails to give a faithful representation of a core activity of a financial institution. I think it's a question of whether we can give a better presentation and more insights into, you know, the performance, and that goes back to what's their target profile, how good are they at achieving it, and what's it costing them. So I'll find it later and send it to you in terms of the reference. But let's not say that about it. It doesn't give a faithful representation. I think it's a question of can we improve it and get more information about this activity. The other, and this, maybe I'm circling back to the project management aspect. Let's figure out what the hardest and most complex things are and do them first, even if it's not a nice, smooth, logical point, you know, stream. And, you know, because there are times when you want to build up slowly and do each thing in sequence, but I think this is one where we might have to figure out what the big ones are.
Yeah.
And so get things sketched out, if not fully developed. And I think that will be important because, first of all, we may want to, if we decide we can go ahead, we may want to limit it to the big ones and not make it something that covers everything. And what prompts this thought is the comment towards the end of the paper about some entities want to consider equity as a hedged item. I'm using the term loosely, because they consider equity to be a funding source. And so we have this, you know, we might have an issue about doing that. What I remember from PRA, the PRA discussion paper, is that that was a much smaller population. And maybe it wouldn't be a perfect model from a preparer's perspective if it only, you know, if it only addressed the core deposit issue and didn't extend to equity. But let's not try and do everything. Let's figure out what the guts are of the central piece, and then we can weigh kind of individually the how much more complex would it be if we tried to address, let's say, those who consider equity as a funding source that should be part of this model, or do we just say that would, that, you know, that doubles the complexity for a relatively small slice of the population. So I think about it really from a project management perspective. How, you know, what do we have to do to get to a point where we can do soundings to say whether it's worth going ahead or whether we pull the plug? And if we pull the plug on something based on approach one, are there others that we then should consider? I agree with you, let's not try and develop several competing approaches in parallel. And worry about getting it sketched out rather than fully developed.
Nick?
I think, like everyone else, I also support the direction that staff are proposing in terms of focusing on cash flow hedging. I like what Mary talks about in terms of early milestones as well. I think it's absolutely critical here that we do this. Capital, we may struggle to get clarity in terms of how that be treated, whether we can get a waiver on that. But I think a critical issue is around the disclosure of the target portfolio and banks' willingness to give clarity around that target portfolio. If we don't have that, we can't have a performance measurement element that's required here. So that would be a particular focus for me. Within that, I do think we need to be minded not just to concentrate on European banks, but to think beyond that at the same time as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you. I support the staff recommendation. It's worth. However, as many people are saying, we shouldn't forget the first TP we tried. We have a good experience that the PRA approach was the fair. That's why we are still having IS 39. So the other thing is Martin's suggestion is very, very, you know, good. Whether this cash flow accounting mechanics may be accepted by some, well, I hope some. And so another alternative, maybe that we should apply the amortized cost to the financial instrument. But there are many things, but if we don't provide, propose a model, you know, by based on the long-term, time-consuming research, but finally it was not accepted by the SB4, then it will be a really disaster. So the, in terms of equity volatility, you know, I'd like to, you know, ask on that issue to Martin, equity volatility, but as the paper analyzed that part two, currently, many cash flow proxy account hedge accounting are being done by many financial institutions. So, Martin, why those financial institutions use cash flow hedge account even though there might be some equity volatility?
Man, I don't know. I can only guess. But I think some banks don't have a problem with equity because they have sufficient, others not. And if they, these banks which have not so much equity have a big volatility, maybe they prefer fair value hedge accounting because then they don't have an impact on equity. Other banks which have a lot of equity, they don't care about it, then smaller. So I think that's the main reason, because when current, after the financial crisis, it is not only the P&L which matters for the bank, it is equity, which especially for some, especially in Europe, not so good capitalized banks which they are looking after. Therefore, it matters more than maybe 10 years ago.
So that might be a very critical factor, as many people are analyzing the significance of this equity volatility issue. So you are expecting such a kind of a big volatility in equity.
Yeah, my point was, okay, I think not to develop a model which after 5 years we identify nobody what is willing to apply. That was my main point.
Yeah, well, so that's what we heard around the table. Yeah. And support for the direction in which the staff is thinking. My only problem is how can we possibly compete with the derivatives at amortized cost?
Can I just clarify one thing? There's no such thing as derivatives at amortized cost. Well, derivatives are cash accounted. You can't come up with an effective interest rate for a swap or an option. So all you do, Hans, with that is you cash account for a derivative. So for most derivatives, nothing is on the balance sheet. So amortized cost accounting for derivatives doesn't exist.
So what? Well, we still can't compete with that yet.
No, we can't.
But what did they? I mean, IFRS has always been very clear that all derivatives should be fair value P&L. So what did they carve out?
So no. Huh? Let's take this. I'll explain to you that. Yeah. It's not that they carved out that bit.
But my problem with this direction is if you want to do something this difficult, and beforehand you make it clear, well, we are only going to do it if you like it, and they have very poor accounting available for them.
Well, we at least have to
get anywhere?
To go on with our eyes open, I think.
Yeah.
Just a quick question, and I really concur with Martin's early test, but I don't want to get bogged down on European carve-out. The world's a big place.
Yeah.
And my question is, should we just set that aside and say, is this going to be a significant improvement for the rest of the world, even if in this case Europe doesn't want to come along? Yeah.
But I think the question is also going to be, do banks outside Europe want to come along?
Yeah, that's why I'm back to Martin's, but I...
Yeah.
Absolutely, it's got to be a wider sector. Yeah. It's got to be a wider sector.
Yeah. Okay.
Can we get a vote on the approach?
Yes.
Yeah. Everybody agree? Does it make you feel better? Or?
Yes, it would. It would. After the journey.
No, I don't want to send a message via a vote that we support a cash flow hedging based model for these. I think what we have said to the staff is, yes, you're right to pursue developing something based on that, but I think a vote, X number voted in favor, I think could be way over red.
Yeah, okay, can I just quickly summarize something? What we have heard is that the board is in favor of approach one. We will develop it. But we need to come up with, I think before we go further into the technical, what would be ideal as we were discussing is to come before the board with a project plan which tells how we go about with the early vetting of whatever we are coming up with, what the board will develop, and outline for them at what point this will happen. If everybody agrees, that's how we will work along, and then we will start proceeding on the technical discussions based on that project plan. So initially, what
I don't object to that. I'm not sure if you come to me with a list of these are the papers we're going to bring, whether I'm well equipped to know whether it's comprehensive enough or not. So I'm going to be very reliant on you telling me that is enough to get us a skeleton.
Yes, it's basically giving you the topics with enough fleshed out to know what the discussions are, to what the skeleton will be, and also asking your views at what point do we test this, because that was also going to be quite critical in this. And when we do this, that's the idea. It will be a skeleton, it cannot be fully fleshed out, that's impossible, but more critically, what point is the skeleton ready to go out and have a walk in the park?
Okay, you get the skeleton out of the closet as quickly as possible.
It's been 15 years in the making, Hans.
I think something else that's come out, Amaro's points, that we need to think about this as a global standard in the light of IAS 36 into IFRS 9.
Exactly.
Yeah?
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.